So welcome to another Twin Peaks, What Lies Beneath Mirror podcast. I want to start tonight by letting everybody know that we are in the middle of difficult, challenging and life-shifting times for a very specific reason. Let me attribute to the fact that we have the sun in Pisces and the moon is in Capricorn. But more importantly than that, we have the moon, Mars, Saturn, Pluto, and Jupiter all in Capricorn. So the mirror of all that's taking place and then expressing itself in our external perception of the world is very concentrated. And instead of getting straight into the guts of this particular Twin Peaks mirror, that is the metaphysical, the meta-universe of David Lynch, and the mind's eye, that is his brainchild Twin Peaks that I've been talking about now for a few weeks, I'm going to share an audio that I was channeled to share with the rest of my group, the Seven Sense. For those who know my background, I also represent, if you like, spearhead a group called the Seven Sense. And all of what we've been doing energetically as individuals searching our potential, which brings us into a much larger collective, conscious, expansive space, is to become more available to building a seventh sense, getting rid of the illusory nature of our six senses, or our, for lack of a better word, our five senses. Our sixth has been kind of diminished to a point where it doesn't exist anymore. But building a seventh sense, which is essentially a more heightened, more greater awareness and sensitive awareness of our planar reality. So this particular podcast is going to focus on the return. That's what I really want it to be about. It's about dissecting the mindset, if you like, the subconscious, electrically charged particle nature of episodes 1, 2, and 3 of The Return, which set the stage for the remaining 15 episodes, culminating in probably one of the greatest cliffhangers ever created in television history, for that matter. But I do want to share the fact that we're all going through something that has an impactful nature, an impactful, formidable energy on all of us, and to allow us to radiate and emanate compassionate strength at the highest level of our external expression through our personalities to support other people. So without further ado, and as I stated, the prequel, the Moon, Mars, Saturn, Pluto and Jupiter are all in Capricorn, intensifying everything that's happening in your life. So perhaps this particular audio will shed some light. The first thing I want to say is congratulations. I mean, you feel like you have broken through and you've done such a huge amount of work on the personal and the transpersonal journey in transmuting so much of what was holding you back. And perhaps if there was something to take away from this pandemic that's wiping people out by the thousands every day, and necessary for a true, clear and purge of the planet, don't get me wrong, it's not from a non-compassionate perspective, we're all good at self-sabotaging because we're all programmed to be and act a certain way. And what a lot of us who are moved well and truly out of that subservient, slave-like capacity to the old paradigm, to the old belief structures and the old archetypal mirrors and the like,
realising in painstaking clear clarity on the 5D timeline is none of it really has any value. Value is a very important part of new language. Everything can be attributed to, even though it can be perceived from an egoic perception, but everything has value. Your connection with your family has value. Your connection with friends has value. Your connection with your work situation has value. Your connection with nature has value. Your connection with spirituality has value. Your connection with God or your, you know, your particular spirit guides has value. And all that's happening in through the mirror of the coronavirus, which is very, very much a kick in the face to tell us once and for all that the top-down authority that we were all once so wrapped up and subservient in has died. As people die, so does that mentality, that paradox, that paradigm, that particular way of doing things dies with it. So it's wonderful when you can break through and when you can feel as if you are finding a more important reason to get up in the morning and do what you do. This is also forcing us to go deep within for those who haven't done the work. And there are literally tens of millions of people out there that haven't done the work and therefore are going to struggle because this is all incredibly mirror reflective accurate of certain planetary transits. And in particular, what became very clear for self was look back through the mirror of May 19 to June 19 in 2012. You know, remember we were all gearing up for what considered to be at that point the end of the world as we knew it, with the Mayan prophecy of the end of the calendar on December 21st, 2012, which really signaled the death of the age of Pisces and signaled in, again, unparalleled clarity, the age of Aquarius. Any new age has to kill off its old demons, its old attritions, its old attributes and connections and situations and circumstances in order for it to birth new. And this is what the podcasts and the live streams will be about. It won't be about talking about what was. It will only talk about what is. Because if we're not reflecting who we truly are through the mirror of now, then we haven't learned anything. And for that matter, we deserve...
So we're going to start tonight with Careless by Urban Dance Squad.
Slap with a few percentage triangle. I do what I do. I do what I do for the rest. I don't care. I do what I do. I do what I do for the rest. I don't care. I care as a scare as some for three best, but I dare to match with status square as a Dunkin' Donut. Then forever I hope never to slop for pop and get dip and soap. I cope with styles and pals obscure and darkened. You're piling some garbage, you must be a sparkman. Often the word to be heard, don't find apartment. I'm the monkey smacking donkeys, you could get started, man. With sensory trends, that's in the street, hopes gigantic. Blow up fast and trendy, faster than Titanic. Can't become a yoke, my knees to plank herself. Too damn busy, really think about ourselves. Being in the giving brother some help. Moving rumors, numerous, and treat them like elves. Observing boundaries, smashing counterfeits. The magazines and fees only to serve my needs. I do what I do. I do what I do. For the rest, I don't care. I do what I do. I do what I do. For the rest, I don't care.
So, feeling the air and realizing that we really didn't change, David decided that he was going to bring in all manner of scientific exploration and explanation. Now, I'm not the right person to talk about this. Either Greg Delapie or Corey Kaplan is. And in a way, I'm going to leave it to them. Suffice to say that those who have watched The Return would probably be wondering about the first three scenes in episode one. And he was good enough to kind of give us a double dose, a double whammy, by allowing us to see episodes one and two back to back when it first launched. But let's look at those first three scenes and what they represent, you know, in a more human capacity, a human reflection of the behavior that had developed and or regressed in 25 years since the show ended. Well, the first thing we see is we see the vision of what looks like a camp atop Whitetail Peak, which would have to be Major Briggs's alien outstation. I don't know what the name of it is, and I'm sure people do, but it is interesting that we are immediately being drawn into an otherworldly or an alien-esque type of environment this time around, first thing off the bat. We then have the superimposed image of Laura's purity over the cascading waterfall below the Great Northern Hotel, run by Ben and Jerry Horn, which is to a greater degree the river of disunity and dissension. The falls represent a cascading wave that is tumbling into chaos because it all stems from these so-called propagators or perpetrators on high of what works best for the town as a whole. These are your so-called town leaders. But I don't want to get bogged into that either. So we see this cascading thing, which then turns into the red curtains of the waiting room, and then we have the main people behind the show, and finally, you know, obviously written by Mark Frost and David Lynch and directed by somebody, if it's not David. And the first thing we see is we get the wind. We get the wind through the trees as we sweep up Whitetail Peak, and we arrive at a fairly sort of a long shot. So David wants us to observe this for a little while before there's any action, and a truck pulls up with a cargo on the back, and lo and behold, who comes out the door wearing his characteristic 3D glasses, or so we thought, but Dr. Jacoby. Dr. Jacoby is the medium that David uses to test the water, right? He's testing the water once again, testing the airwaves. Where are we at? And who better than the rather out of place, always quirky, always not part of the normal scale of influence in a situation or a society, presenting himself as somebody that has answers to help we, the viewer, shovel ourselves out of the shit. And he gets his shipment of shovels, which he then proceeds to paint in the fugazi of the new TV landscape, which is all fake, which is all basically fabricated, let's just leave it at that, and his shovels represent that. And he is actually a new persona called Dr. Amp. So he's the one that embodies what we have now accepted as the new consumable form of violence and fodder and filler and nothing on television. And his tirades during his internet show, remember it's an internet show, no such thing as the internet when Twin Peaks first aired, this is an internet show where he is now not talking to us, he is talking at us and saying, what is it about this and what is it about that, that, you know, you've become so beholden to and that you have felt important enough to attach to. And we'll go back and forth to Dr. Jacoby, Dr. Ant, for these shake-ups in our planar reality. So he is the voice of the people. He is now the voice of the zeitgeist. He is the one that is reiterating and reinforcing all of the anomalies and all of the negative forces that now permeate at the heart of our lives. And from there, we literally cut to an overhead scene of New York City, and we're introduced to the glass box experiment. And the glass box experiment presents a young man who we don't know, so we have a new character who is basically surrounded by cameras and recording equipment, and he is charged with the responsibility to watch this box because something is going to one day appear in it. So David is already setting the stage for bringing in cryptic mystery. Meta forms are already emerging. And as I said, one of the other two members of the team will talk more about what is known as the double slit experiment, the collapsing of particles and waves into form, which can then be observed and essentially drawn into our planar reality. And that's important because David is trying to give us a third chance here. Gave us a first chance, first season, second chance with Firewalk with Me, now third chance with The Return. Can we get it right the third time around? And this is representing just how high-tech everything has become. This is a reference, if you like, to the intuitive and somewhat directive AI that rules a lot of our lives, a lot of the automated aspects and elements in our everyday lives. And a lot of us are still oblivious to it even happening. So once again, for those who are kind of scratching their heads, go back and have a look at Stanley Kubrick's 2001, and there are a number of others as well. So we cut from that to the arrival of, and for the first time, we see Cooper's doppelganger in full flight. After we've been in the Red Room and we've had the firemen tell Cooper, this is an old Cooper now, you know, sitting in what we call the White Lodge. Again, the space between space, the space between worlds, and giving him a number of directives. I'm not going to go into the directives because this is something for people to make their own mind up about it. I'm not going to offer insight as to what the directives are. It's all about essentially...
So let's have some more music now. You're listening to Magazine Radio and the Twin Peaks What Lies Beneath live stream with your curator, your spiritual tour guide, if you like, Mike Puskas. And we're going to play another great piece of music from an incredibly visceral artist, no longer about these days, Susie from Susie and the Banshees, and harken back to the ancient days of when things mattered and were more available for all to contribute to. This is Arabian Nights. You're on Magazine Radio. Arabian Nights by the incomparable Susie and the Banshees from 1979. And we'll continue right here on Magazine Radio with more of Twin Peaks and what lies beneath. What lies beneath, indeed.
Search your heart, you know, before you get into the language of your head, to kind of figure out whether you already know where this is all going. And then from there we kind of meet Mr. C. Mr. C is the term that is being used to represent the bad Cooper, or the doppelganger. And he arrives in a kind of a silver Mercedes, which kind of represents the old version of himself, representing the intrinsic goodness that we, the viewer, once ultimately had the chance to expand and make more a part of the core focus of our lives, and promptly garages that and gets into a big, black, dark Lincoln, black Lincoln, which now represents the epitome of his evil ways and all of the darkness that he's about to, and not just the darkness and the chaos that he's about to unleash on the world. And not just the world of Twin Peaks. We've already seen that we're in New York, we're going to be going to Buenos Aires, we're going to be going to Las Vegas, we're going to be going to Buckhorn, South Dakota, and a bunch of other places, which means that it's a much wider expanse of exposure that this consumable violence has been able to spread to. The virus is alive and well. And funnily enough, in the midst of all of that, David is thinking, in order to keep the sort of viewers, the dreamers, dreaming and open to being the dreamers as I take them through this journey that most of them are trusting me to present to them, I've got to also keep it very much within a kind of a typical lens that is Twin Peaks, the quirkiness of Twin Peaks. And that's the mystery. So there are all these new characters, and they all have, you know, Mr. C meets Bueller and Otis, and all of a sudden we've got Ray and we've got Daria, and everybody seems to be scheming. So everything in that world is already, you know, doppelganger city. It's all dark mirror, shadow reflection of itself. But within all of that, we also have the concept of what we call dumb luck. Is it possible that the viewer, just through the lens, the perspective of sheer dumb luck, that they're going to get it this time around and I'm going to feel somewhat fulfilled as a film director? Introducing Dougie Jones. Dougie Jones is, any which way you look at it, the fake representation of our expectations of this show. Because nothing really happens. He is the embodiment, the epitome of nothingness, which means he is non-existent, unlike the, you know, the real Cooper, who has now escaped from the lodge and transited through many, many different collapsed parallel realities and planar realities to arrive in the form, through an electrical socket, a fusion of electrical charge, different, I'm trying to think of the word. For some reason, the word is escaping me at the moment. But different electrical strains or electrical strands, streams, different electrically charged streams of consciousness. He's collapsed through all of those different layers of the deeper deception of the programmed existence to arrive in the form of this somewhat witless and amnesia, doesn't remember a single thing, let alone can speak, let alone can really walk, let alone can really communicate or whatever, and we're left kind of looking at this simpleton which represents us? Have we been so open to being dumbed down to a ridiculous point of nothingness where we just don't matter? Is David basically saying, let me put you guys on the screen, because when I've collapsed all of your realities and all of your so-called self-expressions, distorted or otherwise, through your attachment to beliefs and archetypes and dogmatic principles and influences within society and control programs and AI interfacing and the list goes on. Have you arrived to be the embodiment of nothingness, a pathetic excuse of the reflection you once were? He really is dumbing us down as the dreamers. But he will throw in, and I give him great credit to do this, he will throw in these wonderful breadcrumbs once again that keep us dreaming, that keep us active in the dream, the self-perpetuated dream we create for ourselves. So Dougie Jones is a very complicated, yet on screen, a simple embodiment of the dumbed down nature of society that just seems to be always suffering the expression of just dumb luck. 27 jackpots, I think it was. He eventually gets called by, you know, an old homeless woman. Many of us have been relegated to, you know, living on welfare and, you know, leeching off a society goodwill, societal goodwill or whatever like that. She's a bum. She refers to him, the simpleton, the dummy, as Mr. Jackpot.
I thought we should have some music and stay in that theme, particularly around the language of the heart. And this is Heartbeat by the seminal all-female rock and roll band from LA, The Runaways, one of my favourite all-female rock and roll bands. And listen to the lyric, because this is very indicative of where we've come from to some degree. This is Heartbeat. You're on Megazine Radio.
Thank you.
Runaways and Heartbeat, classic LA rock and roll band from the 70s. You're on Magazine Radio, you're listening to the Twin Peaks What Lies Beneath live stream. What Lies Beneath, indeed.
And Mr. Jackpot keeps getting drawn into circumstances and situations with other characters that pretty much take him within an inch of his life a lot of the time. This guy barely wakes up every day and survives. But underneath that facade of dumbness, of plain stupidity, a pathetic reflection through the mirror of what we once were, is this burgeoning, beautiful love story between Janie E and Sonny Jim. And it's their patience and it's their kind of, well, you know, if this is our dad and my husband and he's now kind of lost his marbles and doesn't know whether it's up or down or day or night, well, that's not going to change the fact that I care for him, and it's not going to change the fact that I love him and that he's an important part of my and my son's life. So underneath all of our misfortunes and misgivings and all our mistakes and our flaws and faults, we get the opportunity to see just how it all doesn't matter, as long as it's honest, it's open-hearted, it's authentic, and it's transparent. And David is now saying to us that you can be all these things that the rotten eggs that you've become, because you're so susceptible to the influence of the consumable violence on television, that underneath it all, we've still got a lot to show, and we've still got a lot of worthy qualities worth developing and expressing. And we get a chance to see Dougie do that in his interactions, you know, at Lucky Seven Insurance with the Minchin brothers. And some of my favourite characters, of course, are the pop queens, the pink candy pop queens. You know, they've got a very important role in all of this. So we look at Dale Cooper being relegated through our own degradation. Oh, whatever. You know, it's like when we degenerate or something like that. Seeing that collapse. He's collapsed into this kind of nothingness particle that isn't really kind of doing much at all from being Special Agent Dale Cooper, FBI. So too much of this consumable violence that we've now made a regular kind of routine, if you like. We've made and accepted as part of our routine has rotten our brains, and we're left empty-headed. So we've kind of become a reflection of our own acceptance of these denigrating societal forms. The meta that's represented is essentially, how can we ever hope to be this lucid and this wonderfully flexible wave of experience when we're always solidifying ourselves in the same space? This is habitual pattern. This is recycling program taking place at its best. So David is giving us an opportunity to come through what we think is somewhat kind of now ingrained in our culture. That we all have the opportunity to self-correct. We all have the opportunity to reverse our fortune and chase our stars. Change our stars is a good way to look at it. So we've seen a complete metamorphosis take place with Special Agent Dale Cooper. to this rather reflection of nothing? Is that what we want? If we continue to go down this road, then is that what we're all going to end up being? We've been rotten by the television that has captured us and enslaved us, and it's left us like rotten eggs and empty-headed, hence all the crushing of the skulls, all the noise, all the sounds. Listen for the sounds. That's the sign that the fireman is trying to tell us. Listen for the sounds of the cracking skulls as your own skull, you the viewer, you the dreamer, as your own mind circuit starts to collapse around you and you become a zombie. And that's exactly what Dougie Jones is. He's a zombie until he's not a zombie. But we go through literally 15 episodes of trying to work out head or tail what the hell is Dougie Jones really doing. So David is playing with us. David is saying, well, if you guys aren't going to get it again, I'm going to give you this incredibly intricate and lavishly and beautifully shot and cryptic imagery and all this heavier depth of field and, you know, lots of vivacious and vibrant, you know, opportunities and action play out that leads to nothing. I'm quite happy to lead you like a stray dog through this maze to arrive, because the whole idea of Twin Peaks isn't even represented anymore. It's not there. None of the characters are even remotely like themselves anymore 25 years later. And one of the biggest representatives of that, as I said at the beginning, is that Dr. Amp and his internet show is letting us know that things have denigrated to such a point that even our youth, our disenfranchised youth, have lost their way. And look at all of the different characters that represent the youth. My God, people need to know what the Roadhouse really is. You know, the Roadhouse is the nowhere, it's the halfway point, it's the waiting room of the bums and the no-hopers and the disenfranchised and the lost. And even though you've got incredible artists that David Hand picked especially, you have to go into the lyrics of the songs that these artists like the Chromatics and Eddie Vedder and, you know, Trent Reznor sing. They are really specific to just how nowhere, it's gone, it's gone, it's the sand of time, it's all nothing, it's what's the point? There's a futility that's represented by the vignettes of nothingness with absolutely no correlation to the story, the interplay on screen. They're just there as gratuitous crap. And he's aware of that. He's saying, I'm just going to throw gratuitous crap at them at the end, that you come to the end of the episode, I'm going to leave you in the same spot, you're going to get some music, you're going to think that it's entertaining. It's not entertaining. It's just me basically letting you know that, hey, you've arrived back at the greater point of mediocrity. Welcome back. Wow. This is visionary stuff, to have this kind of going through your head as part of a larger, expansive, conscious landscape, and then bringing it to fruition. Now, like I said at the beginning as well, it nearly didn't get a chance to come back, right, even though there was a huge hoo-ha behind it, because Showtime did not feel obligated to give David the kind of budget that he wanted to make the show properly. So in a lot of ways, the return is David sticking his finger back up at the network to say, I will never give a true account of what it is that I really, really want to do and present, because I'm not being given the tools, in this case the financial support I need and the time I need, to bring this to a successful fruition. So I'm just going to give you what I think is kind of good enough and half-assed and sort of crosses the T's and dots the I's and gets us across the line. And that's very much what The Return is, even though we love it. We love anything that is even remotely representative of Twin Peaks and Twin Peaks folklore and you know, and its wonderful dissection of the human condition. But I also think that David didn't realize that consciousness on the planet, remember the planet's consciousness, that is Earth's own consciousness as a living, breathing being, has also evolved to a particular point, which is at a nurturing and nourishing state of emotional support for its species. I don't think David realized that the consciousness of the planet would create such an incredible reaction and response to what he ended up putting on the screen as somewhat half-assed. Now, it was very smart the whole way it was put, because ultimately we had The Return, and then almost immediately after The Return, I think, and don't quote me if I'm right or wrong here, but we had the release of The Secret History of Twin Peaks. So that's kind of like, you know, crossing more T's and dotting more I's and creating more closure. And then we had Mark Frost release The Final Dossier. So we really have come full circle. And what David wants us to do now is he wants us to stew in what it is we've been through. We've been through the black hole. We now need to integrate all of what we received as a transmission to our highest conscious spiral and allow that to sink in. And this is why we're having these conversations. This is why I'm sitting out here just shy of midnight with the full moon in Taurus, and it just basically hanging behind, you know, a massive bank of clouds, creating a really, really sort of greyness to the night after having such a beautifully vibrant day right here on 11/11. And, you know, I actually will say one thing which really demonstrates the sort of synergistic and the serendipity and the synchronicity. I love these three words more than anything, and how they become very representative of the event streams that you draw into your moment, your now moment. And David is very, very good at being able to amplify that, echo that. When I finally sat down at my computer and started to kind of look at what the day was going to bring, I noticed that it was just on 10 past 11, on 11/11, and straight away I got a notification on Facebook from someone that is dear to me, who runs the 11/11 movement on Facebook, and she had posted in there and whatever, and then I knew straight after that something else within that same kind of admin group would do the same, and it did, and then I posted in as well, and the three of us all came together kind of well before a lot of the other people kind of just waking up to the fact that, oh gee, it's 11/11, you know, happening, these posts, the synchronicity of the three of us who haven't spoken to each other in 5-6 months at all, that we're all essentially pasting our truth on social media, on the internet airwaves at appropriately 11/11 on 11. So that's amazing, and that's why I'm sitting out here quite cold now, no action whatsoever, the fish are saying absolutely not interested whatsoever, and talking to you, because there's something about the energy and the clarity of which this is all peeking through. You know, a lot of people sit there for long periods of time and scope out, right, this is point one, and I'm going to go from point one into this, and then I'm going to go and intersect that to that and that and that. But when you sit out here, you open your heart, you know that you're already, you know, experiencing and finding love's liberating light and intention in everything that's taking place around you, and you're amplifying gratitude. That's absolutely key. Amplifying gratitude as you breathe deeply, and this stuff just pours out. It pours out of you because the universe is saying, it's worthy of your attention to do this. I promise you that once you do this, once you get this to that acceptable state, you know, because it's on the iPhone at the moment, just raw and whatever, that people will tune in. There will be a conversation started and drawn into a deeper conscious focus around what it is that you're presenting to the world. And if there was anything that I would like to state to the collective, is if I can do it, you can do it too. And so I'm asking you all to consider in your lives, wherever you are, to start a conversation by being responsive to what it is that you hear and what it is that resonates with you, especially in the deepest recesses of your heart space.
Absolute gratuitous crap. Couldn't be a more apt way of putting it. The vignettes of the roadhouse, the glimpses into the parallel universe that we, the zeitgeist, have allowed our disenfranchised youth to become mirror reflections of nothingness. So we need a bit of loving now, and I'm going to bring a track that I really enjoy. I've always had a great passion for the Sweet from the UK, now that we're throwing caution to the wind and we're playing everything we really want to play, but keeping it in context, I thought this was a great track, really sort of keep you guys awake, keep you driven. We've still got another, you know, 15 to 20 odd minutes to go before we wrap. So this is Need a Lot of Lovin' by the Sweet. You're listening to Megazine Radio.
Down.
Lovin' by The Sweet. Yeah, I gotta love that rock and roll. You're listening to Magazine Radio. It's ridiculously early in the morning, and we're all having a great time cracking the eggs, the skulls of gods of light, and all that goes on and lies beneath, indeed.
Well, I think that that pretty much sums it up. I could go into more detail about Dougie and Dougie's cathartic journey and how he eventually kind of, you know, arrives at a point where he's looking. Okay, I will say this. So all manner of close call scenarios play out for Dougie, Dale Cooper. But the thing that David wanted us to actually twig to or trigger to wake him up and help him remember that he is a member of the FBI, he's an FBI agent, was the scene of Sunset Boulevard with Norma Desmond. And we had just cut from a scene, if I remember correctly, where Norma had been, you know, Ed had just been given his freedom by Nadine, who had completely turned everything on her head, and she's a whole different ballgame worthy of a discussion, and told Norma that I'm free to explore and everything, and all of a sudden, that consumable kind of insatiable appetite, violence, distraction and interference comes in the way of the dude who wants to basically franchise Laura's Double R Diner establishment, and she turns around and completely puts it all on their head, turns it all on the head and says, no, you buy me out, I'll keep things exactly the way they are. And that references back to the old Twin Peaks, the Twin Peaks we grew up and learned to live and love with. And so from there we go to this scene where Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard gets his phone call from the studio executives to say, you know, come in, we need to talk about something important. She thinks it's her return to the spotlight, you know, and that, you know, she's been kind of like left in the dark and sort of like left out of the loop, if you like, thinking that this is going to be her return to the spotlight and that she's going to get it all back. And really all it's about is essentially the studio executive wanting to hire a car because it would be perfect for one of the films that they're currently producing. And it's that referencing to the Norma Desmond kind of character and that whole sort of, well, you know, I used to be this and now I'm not this and all of a sudden I have a chance to be this. That's what triggers Cooper to ultimately, you know, stick a fork in the socket, recharge himself with a whole new strain of electricity, and remember who he is. And next minute, bang, just like clockwork, he's back as his old self. He's ready to solve all the issues and says, we've got to immediately get back to the Sheriff's Department at Twin Peaks, and the rest is history. Bob is destroyed. The woodsmen are pretty much sent packing. Philip Jeffries kind of spills the beans, and Mr. C goes back to the Black Lodge, and to a greater degree, all is resolved. Or so we thought. And perhaps I'll leave it for that, and the next discussion will be the way that I've kind of summarized what I think happened in episodes 17 and 18, including the last 5 minutes between Carrie Page and the old Dale Cooper. But I'm going to leave it there for now. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you got something out of this. This has basically been my detailed dossier of Dale Cooper's role in David Lynch's Unique Vision.
Let's have some more music now, and I want to focus on how the show and what it embodied really stimulated in so many of us in the fan world, the ones who just wouldn't let it go. And this is Mile again, my local Melbourne incarnation, featuring Julian Reed and myself, a track called Electricity, if you like, inspired by episode 8 of The Return. And we're going to get through that, really feel into the vibe of what that track is all about, the electrified nature of really inspiring the fire, the intensified nature of who we are in the zeitgeist and how we relate directly to the meta monomyth of media today, including the David Lynch universe. And then we'll get stuck into the first episodes of The Return. This is Electricity by Mile. Drink full and descend. City and from Mile here in Melbourne, Australia. Powerful new song from the forthcoming album Biofeedback Loop, very much embodying the mood of the zeitgeist. You're on Megazine Radio, you're listening to the Twin Peaks What Lies Beneath live stream. What Lies Beneath. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this particular live stream of Twin Peaks, What Lies Beneath, and the discussion regarding really the first two sort of crossover episodes, which we were so lucky to receive through David's good graces. He did give us both of those particular shows back to back. So I was very, very pleased and very happy to have received that as a gift from David after so many, many years, 25 years of waiting for it to all come back and grace our screens once again. And this is essentially a deeper reflection, a meta reflection, a metaphorical reflection of how things have really ultimately shifted for many of us since we got a chance to watch that incredible, I suppose you'd call it an archetypal understanding of a deeper journey, because there were so many genuine archetypes at play. There was the kind of the loss in the delusion of the nothingness, the old wholesomeness and the intrinsic goodness of the old Twin Peaks, replaced very much by the particle wave duality expression of the new characters embodying the new emerging Twin Peaks and the zeitgeist that we as a collective were able to witness each week on screen. But an observation outside of everything that's going on with this particular view, in direct relation to what's happening with the pandemic, having a pretty good idea of some of David's actual working crew at the David Lynch Foundation, I would say without any reservation that this whole corona, COVID-19, numerology reduced to 18, 1 and 8 is the 9, the life path of humanity moving forward, the revelatory nature, etc., etc., of this particular pandemic would have also very much reached his receptors. Probably so much so that if there was ever a trigger to perhaps come back with either a fourth season of Twin Peaks, or at least what he really loves most is the cinematic expression and the deeper kind of connectivity he achieves by presenting things on the big screen, I wouldn't be surprised if within the next 12 months we should see something. I think there'll be a genuine and authentic reaching out to Mark Frost to say, hey, you know, I think humanity may really be open-hearted enough to see this for the cleansing and purging that it really is, instead of being embodied in the paranoia and the fear in the particle wave, that it's worthy of our attention, it's worthy of our particular skill base, if you like, to perhaps present another installment that goes even a little more deeper into where we kind of scratch the surface in the different interplay of characters and the storyboards that we brought to life in Twin Peaks The Return. And that would be awesome. I mean, awesome from the perspective more so that many of us really kind of live through the mind's eye of our favourite directors. For me, it's David Lynch, it's Stanley Kubrick, it's Quentin Tarantino, and it is J.J. Abrams to a degree. But overall, we just love the idea of challenging our subconscious understanding of this plane of reality. And David is without a doubt the master. So I'm going to finish the show by playing a track that I really feel embodies who we are back then, who we are, the dreamers, in the zeitgeist right now, and who we could be very soon if we all essentially self-correct, pull together. So this is See Me, Feel Me, and Listening to You by the infamous Who, and perhaps it's the moment of pause that really builds me. Thanks for listening. I'm Mike Puskas, and looking forward to connecting with you all again on another Twin Peaks What Lies Beneath live stream. Much love and peace on earth and goodwill to all men.